Disappointed is a word. Like I don't know if there's an enraged category, but this book would be that book.
Hey readers, I'm Anne Bogle, and this is What Should I Read Next, episode 71. Welcome to the show that's dedicated to answering the question that plagues every reader. What should I read next? We don't get bossy on this show. What we will do here is give you the information you need to choose your next read. Every week, we'll talk all things books and reading and do a little literary matchmaking with one guest.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Today's guest is an early member of the What Should I Read Next family. If you were a listener back at the very beginning of our show, you have Knox McCoy to thank for getting it into your ears. Knox was our behind-the-scenes producer for the first 11 episodes. You may also know him as the co-host of The Popcast with Knox and Jamie, a personal favorite podcast, and I know it's many of yours as well. I could throw you some teasers about what we talked about in this episode, and it's all really good stuff, but what you really need to know is this. While we were chatting, I had to tamp down the fear of my recommendations to Knox getting red-lighted on a future episode of the podcast, and I dreamt about recommending a book that would get that coveted green light. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, we'll get to it, starting now. Knox, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, well, I'm so excited to talk to you. Okay, I don't know if people actually know this, but you were the man making the magic happen on the first 11 episodes of What Should I Read Next?
You generously allowed me to help the creation of this beautiful, beautiful show. So I'm forever grateful for that opportunity.
I think what you mean to say is you made it happen so I didn't have to figure out iTunes.
Not at all.
Which I greatly appreciated. So I feel like we're having a full circle moment here this morning with you actually being on, what is it, like a restaurant? Is this front of the house now? Back of the house?
I wonder, is this like when on a super low level, like when someone who was on SNL comes back to host SNL?
That's a great pop culture reference. I don't know enough about SNL. See, this is out of my league, which is why you and Jamie do your thing. And I can stay to the world of media confined to the page.
There you go. See, there's always something really surreal about someone who is like helping the production of a show and they come back and they're on the stage and everyone's like, you shouldn't be here, but you're only here because the host is really nice. And that would be you in this case. So,
but seriously, it's so much fun to talk to another podcaster. And I know that a lot of people know you already or are about to know you because of the podcast you do with Jamie Golden, The Popcast.
That's right.
Okay. Do you want to, you should probably tell that in your own words because I don't know enough about The Bachelor to be allowed to talk about.
Yeah. So if you haven't heard, or if you don't listen or you don't know who I am, I host the podcast with Knox and Jamie with my partner, Jamie Golden. I think, was Jamie your first guest ever?
She was guest number one.
That's right. Patient zero here. So now we're really coming full circle. But yeah, so Jamie and I, we've known each other for several years, and about 3.5 years ago, we were like, hey, we should do a show, talk about pop culture because we both really love it. So every Wednesday, we just have like about an hour long conversation about different themes and topics and events in pop culture, and we try to have a lot of fun as we do it.
Your show is not all about the books. It's a lot about The Bachelor and celebrity marriages. And I feel like I get my Cliff Notes version of what is actually happening in the world that a lot of people care about.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, like the thing we say is like we're delightful idiocy. So we go for the fun stuff. But, you know, at the end of our shows, we always do like a green light, like a recommendation. And we really take that seriously. And that's a spot where we try to talk a lot about books, Jamie in particular, because she reads so fast. But anytime I read a good book, I'm really looking forward to that segment so I can really talk about and recommend like why I liked XYZ book.
I'm hoping we get to hear some green light books today. Well, I really love it when you talk about books too, because I know Jamie's a big reader. And you, how do you describe yourself as a reader?
Diligent, maybe. Like, it's really intimidating to like work with a speed reader, because she knocks off like 4 books in a week. And I'm like, you know, and I've got 3 kids, so like sometimes I read 2 pages and I'm interrupted. So it's hard, but I love reading. I've always loved reading. I grew up, I taught myself to read with the baseball cards I collected as a kid. And I read everything like I could get my hands on. I remember I ran out of books, and my sister was reading the Babysitter Club books. And I was like, well, I guess I got to read the Babysitter Club books. So I blew through all those. I just love reading, even though I don't do it as fast as some other people.
I feel like when you talk about books on the podcast, it's because you love it. Not just you happen to read 10 books last week and you're going to share the best one just because you didn't want to read those books for nothing and not talk about it on the podcast. Jamie Golden.
That's true. If I make it through a book, like I tend to be evangelical about it. But I do have a thing like, I need your wisdom on, in terms of like, if I get too far into a book, I have this issue, like I got to finish it, but I want to be okay with like just putting a DNF on it and being like, I didn't finish it because I didn't like it. And that's okay. Like, I'm still a good human being.
That is a very personal decision that is up to you. However, John Irving did say, and he's an author who wrote 700-page books, so maybe he just didn't want to incur the wrath of his readers, that as a grown-up, you do not have to finish books you're not enjoying.
Like, but do you feel do you feel like when you're reading something, especially for what you do, like you're obligated to finish it just so you can supply a perspective on it?
Nope. Well, okay, the real answer is yes and no. So that's dangerous territory to feel like you need to read, or for me, that's dangerous to feel like I need to read it because I need to provide a perspective on it. Because first of all, who am I that the world truly needs my perspective on that book? Come on. And also, it sucks the fun out of it really, really quickly. From a purely practical matter, I have a wonderful problem, which is I have too many books, not just ones that are already published, but ones that are going to be published in the future, which is super fun to get your hands on a book that you are dying to read that doesn't come out till July. Like, that could be a wonderful thing. However, nobody's vetted that yet, especially if you're getting like the galleys. There are not even advanced reviews from the sites talking about the books we can't wait to read 6 months from now or a year from now or whatever. And nobody's read those. You don't have anything to go on except the publisher sales copy, which is designed to make you want to buy the book. And sometimes you don't even have that. And every once in a while, it doesn't even have a title yet. And the formatting's hard. So you have to keep telling yourself, like, this is only like 85% of the normal reading experience. So it's give it some grace, push on through. And I mean,
But you're very much at the cutting edge of like discovering if it's good or not. So really it's like an opportunity cost thing for you. Like, you could be slogging through this like dog crunch of a book, or you could be discovering like what the next really great book's going to be.
I love that you use the phrases opportunity cost and dog crunch in the same sentence.
Did they not work together? I thought they did.
Oh no, I thought they were perfect. They were perfect. But yeah, you nailed it. Like, it's all about, if you slog through 300 pages of a book that you're like, yeah, I knew at page 20 or probably page 2, this wasn't for me, then those are books you can't read. But that's hard because you don't always know if it's going to either turn around or if you're going to be glad you read it, even if it wasn't something that you like loved and adored with all your heart and soul. You can still... Yeah. Think it was worth your time, and that's tricky. So I also come back to a lot of books. I almost always tell myself when I put books aside, maybe that it is a book I would enjoy, but it's not the book I need to be reading right now, this second.
I gotcha. Yeah. There, I read a book, it was like a Target choice, blah, 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 editor's pick. It's called We're Unprepared or We're Not Prepared. And I hated it, but like, I made myself finish it. And I think part of it was like, I want to see how terrible this ends. But it really did do a number at the end of last year on me reading other books, like, because I hated reading it, but I had to finish it. So it took so long. And I regretted doing that because I thought I could have been reading like 3 or 4 other really great books that I put off.
Right. Okay. So do you ever quit books, or do you always keep going? Because if you do, I mean, there are a lot of people who say it is in their nature. They are finishers. The end. Don't even try to talk me out of it.
I think weirdly, now that I'm really thinking about it, I think if I start a fiction book, I feel really compelled to finish it. But a nonfiction, I will bail on that no problem.
What's the last nonfiction you bailed on?
Oh, that's a good question. I should have had an answer for. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say a Rob Bell book. And not because like I didn't like what he was talking about or I don't like him. I really am interested by him. But it just didn't – I think I go through nonfiction and fiction seasons.
Yeah.
There's something like the variance of a fiction book can grab you in a way that I just don't think a nonfiction book really can. And if you get your hands on a really good fiction, man, it's hard to turn that away.
Uh-huh. But on the other hand, I wouldn't want to read – I don't know. Think of something big and serious.
Brothers Karamazov.
Yeah, I don't know that I want to read that at the pool. First of all, yeah. It would take up all the space in my bag I need for my towels.
It would. And if you have read that at a pool, can you let me or Anne know? I just want to know more about you as a person. I want to know what that's like.
If it's the right classic or business book, I'm not saying there's not like a big, fat Russian novel I wouldn't read at the pool.
Sure.
I just can't think of one off the top of my head.
I can't either.
The pool we go to is really loud and my children are probably there. Those are important qualifications.
It's not conducive to really digesting the literary themes, probably.
Exactly. Exactly. Knox, since you all do talk about books on the podcast, wait, hold on. Let's camp out there a minute. I just have to say for the listeners that some of my favorite episodes are the ones that go seriously fictional and often literary. Like I loved that episode you did about what makes a good book to movie adaptation and what makes it terrible. I thought that was a really interesting conversation. Favorite fictional duos, fictional families we love to hate. What are some of the other ones you've done?
Yeah, well, you know, we did, I liked one we did, I guess at the end of January, and it was about dystopia. And, you know, there was a dystopic feel at that point, maybe current events wise, but that was something swirling. And I like that we were able to talk about it, you know, in a very like, okay, here's the genre. And then we also, what we try to do is like kind of be a little bit factual and serious and info based. And then we also try to entertain and kind of be stupid. So we talked about like the best people we like to hang out with in a dystopia, like from the Hunger Games or wherever. So I think those are kind of fun conversations to see both sides of the coin.
Oh my gosh. And I was dying when right about the same time that episode came out, your first prediction for 2017 pop culture prediction came true in a big way.
Oh yeah. Look, you throw enough stuff at a wall, something's going to stick eventually, right?
So everybody knew that Beyonce was going to be pregnant with twins. Is that what you're saying? Except you all didn't predict twins.
I said just straight up pregnant. It turned out to twin. Like, who would have thought, right? Who would have thought in a million years it was going to be twins? But hey, like, good for them.
If you could have any current author who makes pop culture news on your podcast, who would it be?
I think, okay, Station 11. Emily St. John Mandel?
That's it.
I always get her name wrong. I would say probably the author of one of my favorite books is Emily St. John Mandel. And I think she does some freelance writing that I've read that I've really enjoyed.
Yeah, she wrote that great piece that was right up your alley. You all probably shared it about...
I think we did. I think we linked to it in a newsletter. But,
about the use... You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
About the way crazy frequent use of the word girl in book titles.
Yes, that's exactly right. So like, I think a lot of times you see an author and they're chained to a typewriter and they just create like amazing fiction or nonfiction or whatever. And you don't get to see the perspective of them just like as a regular person. So when I read her with that kind of handle on culture, even though like that's obvious that she would have something like that, but to be able to have great context and perspective, I would love to have a conversation or listen to her on a panel or any kind of way where you can get an author away from their book or their genre and just hear their thoughts on, you know, the culture at large. I think that's super fascinating stuff.
Because that's really exactly what that piece was about, was a pop culture trend that she found a little disturbing.
And it is disturbing. It's everywhere.
I like it.
Every day, our world gets a little more connected, but a little further apart. But then, there are moments that remind us to be more human.
Thank you for calling Amica Insurance.
Hey, I was just in an accident.
Don't worry, we'll get you taken care of.
At Amica, we understand that looking out for each other isn't new or groundbreaking. It's human. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Okay, speaking of your favorite books, you ready to get to it?
I'm ready.
Okay. Knox, you know how this works. You're going to tell me 3 books you love, 1 book you hate, and what you've been reading lately, and then we'll talk about what you should read next.
I love it. I'm so excited.
I have to say it's kind of terrifying because I'm living in fear of being a red light on a future podcast episode.
It couldn't be possible. Listen,
I would be in such like heinous company. It would be so sad.
You should be honest with the listener because I didn't want to come. I wanted to come on later because I was like, I got to read 2 more books to feel like I'm worthy being on this podcast. So I've really been like packing in the literary stuff. So no, I'm excited to see what you'll recommend.
Okay. And has it made your life better in every way?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Absolutely.
Good answer. Okay. Let's start with your favorites. What's the first book you love?
So I just mentioned it, but I love Station 11, and not for it. That's really probably genre based. I just love. Tell me if it's okay. Like I feel a little, just a tinge of shame saying like I love apocalyptic or dystopian fiction.
Why
like,
is that bad?
I don't know. And that's the thing. I don't know why I'm shaming myself, but it does seem like there's a little bit of a, I don't know. There's something of like. Like it's like saying you like zombie movies, right? Like there's just something that depreciates your like intellect a little bit. If you say that's what it feels like to me, I don't know why. I don't know why I've weighed myself down with such expectations. That's why I like Station 11 because it fits within that genre, but it's not like a classic example of it. I feel like, and we've talked about it on our show. I felt like it was an elegant. A super elegant apocalypse, which was like the best kind of apocalypse to kind of have probably.
Okay. If it makes you feel better, on the now defunct podcast that we all miss, Books on the Nightstand, Michael Kindness and Ann Kingman. And this has been a long time. I remember it was cold out when I listened to this episode. So it's been at least 1 year and maybe 2. They had this whole episode devoted to the question, like, what is genre fiction? Because it's often thought of as less than literary fiction. And I remember them talking about Station 11 as an example of one that didn't fit neatly in boxes because it could be slotted as a genre novel, but it was so well written that it's clearly literary fiction, but it sold so well that that makes it popular, right? But you usually think of like John Grisham as being a popular writer. So,
right. So
you have chosen out of the box novel.
I love that book. I love the way it's written. I love the characters. I love the way she worked the plot and kind of alternated timelines a little bit. Just beautiful. It's hard to read a book and see the movie scene they're talking about, but there are several scenes or chapters in that book where I could so clearly see it that it was unreal.
I haven't read any news, but I can
totally
see that happening.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything either, but it seems like such a no-brainer.
I would like to see that happen. Okay, So you love apocalyptic stories and you're afraid that says something not just about your taste, but like you should be on a therapist couch somewhere. Is that what you're saying?
Precisely.
I like it. Okay. Knox, what's book 2?
I read it a while ago, but it's one of the first books I read where I was like, I feel like I was starting to figure out my taste a little bit. I think I was fresh out of high school maybe, but it's The Secret History by Donna Tartt.
Wow.
Yeah. There's something about stories set in the, coming of age kind of setting, like teenage or college years or whatever. And I just loved it's about a person coming of age. It's about a fish out of water. There's a little mysterious component, and it's about kind of establishing what you want, like what you want to be and what you think you should be and how you reconcile those two things. So I loved, obviously, like I still loved Annatar. Like when I read that, I didn't know who she was or what she was going to become. But you can see really clearly early on how talented she is as a writer and her skills of characterization and, you know, seamlessly merging plot details. So I really, really love that book.
Have you read anything else by her? I have a hard time imagining you picking up The Goldfinch, but I could be totally wrong.
The Goldfinch is one of those I picked up and read two pages and was like, not now, but later. I will read this, but I'm not in the headspace to read this right now.
Yeah. All right. I see it. Okay. Max, what's book three?
Book three is something, and I will plead proximity because I've just a couple months ago read this and it's still kind of like buzzing in my head a little bit. And that's Before the Fall by Noah Hawley.
A green light from the podcast.
It is.
Tell us everything.
Well, the biggest thing I look for in the books I read, like capital letters, number one with a bullet is voice. I live and die by voice. And if you have a voice, like a particular voice, I will read whatever story you're telling. I really don't care what it's about. But if you have a certain way you're telling it, I will ride or die for that voice. And Noah Hawley, like I loved, obviously he's a showrunner with FX for Fargo, and he brings that kind of sensibility to a book. It's very quick. It's very rapid. It's very cinematic the way he writes. And I love the way he uses, I have a problem reading books with too many characters mm-hmm. and too many subplots going on. And he has a way of including a lot of people, but making every single character and subplot feel fully realized. So I love that book. And I even liked the ending. And I went on noxjamie.com where I write about culture and defended the ending, I think. What did you feel about the ending? Did you like it?
Hated it.
I didn't, because like I totally understand that. I totally understand why you would hate it. I appreciated what he did, even though it felt like such a departure from the rest of the book. But I think you know how like some, maybe it's a cliche that some women are attracted to bad boys. Like I'm attracted to bad, untidy endings in books. I really like them, and I don't know why.
Okay, I will say this in Noah Hawley's defense, in defense of the ending, in that it was so you kind of hinted at why you're okay with it, because I don't want to mm-hmm. break it down. I don't want to ruin it for people who haven't read mm-hmm. it. And we're not about to tell you the ending, mm-hmm. just that it, I don't know. Was it what you expected? It wasn't what I expected.
Absolutely not what I expected.
Okay, cool. So we were both surprised, even though we have very different opinions.
Right.
We'll leave it there. But it was the third book in a row I'd read with a resolution that felt very similar, even though the specific circumstances were very different. Like the three novels I read might have ended in different centuries. And yet it felt like the ending was pretty much the same. And I was like, oh, not again. And it's not his fault that he was book three in a run, you know?
Sure. Right, right.
And I still think, I mean, I'm still glad I read it. I still think it was a great book. And yeah, talk about cinematic. I can totally see that.
Yeah, I mean, he's done both seasons of Fargo on FX. Like that is supremely his sensibility. He's doing Legion on FX right now. So that's the perspective he comes in with. And even his dialogue, like you can see that's not book dialogue. That's TV movie dialogue.
Which really worked, I thought, because it doesn't always. Sometimes you're like, oh, you need some stage directions for this to make sense. But I didn't feel that at all with him.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, cool. All right, Knox, I think we've both been waiting to get to this moment. What's a book that disappointed you?
Disappointed is a word. Like, I don't know if there's an enraged category, but this book would be that book. And it's Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. It made me, I don't know if the book made me so mad or if the unabashed love that everyone seems to have for it makes me mad. I don't know what that says about me, but I just really did not like this book.
You got to tell us more about the why. Not about your powerful emotions, but about why this book evoked them.
I'm a big fan of stakes. I'm a big fan of motivation. And I'm a big fan of showing me, not telling me. Okay. And this book, the context is amazing. The setting's amazing. I think the characters are really cool, and I loved, like, I really identified them. I think it really skated way too much on nostalgia, and I think that's why people love it maybe so blindly. Is like they're like, I also like thinking about things from the past in a sentimental way. But the biggest issue is I never felt like Wade Watts had like a Dark Night of the Soul moment where everything got leveled for him. It always just felt like he had an easy plan he could switch to and figure everything out. And he would be like, oh yeah, by the way, I just figured out how to outsmart the supervillain and make all my plans come into perfect realization. And everything was fine. Like it really bothered me that they told me how smart he was without really showing me and not explicitly stating so.
So I really liked Ready Player One, which surprised me because I felt like I was not the target audience. Mm-hmm. But the more I hear about this book, wait, hold on. I have a theory in progress, but first I need some important information that will go into my theory. Where in the Ready Player One popularity cycle did you read it? Did you read it early or did you read it after you'd already heard a lot about it or somewhere in the middle?
You know, I knew a little bit about it. I think I read it, I want to say maybe end of summer last year or the fall of last year.
Okay. So you had expectations when you went in.
A little bit. I didn't have like, this is the greatest book ever expectations, but I did certainly know that like a lot of people really like this book.
Okay. So here's my theory in progress and you can tell me what you think. I listened to this podcast on somebody's recommendation. It's called I Don't Even Own a Television, which they say is a podcast about terrible books. And they have an episode devoted to Ready Player One. And I was like, wow, really? So I listened to it and they basically said the nostalgia is so syrupy, sticky sweet that we wanted to die. Like it was awful. And if you just want like your big nostalgia kick, there are other ways to get it. You don't need to wrap a plot around it. And I'm way summarizing, and it's been a while since I've listened to the episode. But all of a sudden I went, oh, wait, I'm not into 80s nostalgia. I had never seen the movies they talked about. I'm sure tons of the references went straight over my head. And maybe that's why I enjoyed it. I think that's a real possibility.
Maybe. See, I know that's why I didn't like it, because I have a huge aversion to nostalgia. Like Jamie on the podcast loves the Goldbergs, and I hate the Goldbergs. Because it's just about the nostalgia of like the 80s, right? So I feel like it's a little bit lazy when you're using it as like a plot point or construct. But I will fully admit that like I have my own nostalgia that I'm fine with. So I'm super critical in that way.
So that podcast, they said that they hated it. They were also, they might have been gamers, or at least they knew a lot more about it than I did, where it was totally something new and novel to me. But they said that the book was like one enormous, obnoxious wink, wink, nod, nod, with references just like packed to the gills. And it was more than they could take.
That's very true. I can see it's very fan servicey for 80s kids. And I think that's a lot of it. But like, I like the idea of a main character going through stuff and not always being on top of the ball. You know, like I want to see them take a tumble and then see how they, you know, rise from the ashes or whatever.
Okay, I like it. What are you reading right now, Knox?
I am reading right now a book called Razor Girl by Carl Hyacin, I think is how you say it. Are you familiar with this book at all?
I can picture the cover, but I don't know why. I don't know why it's in my head. Tell us.
This book is I'm probably maybe a quarter or a third of the way through. It's one of those where like the voice is absolute perfection, and I felt like this was written by like a 23-year-old prodigy, and I looked the guy up and he's an old dude. Like he's been writing since like the 70s, which just thunderstruck me. But it's about it takes multiple plot lines. It's about kind of a con artist girl, a guy who manages a Duck Dynasty type persona, and their worlds kind of collide. And all of it is set in Florida, which, as we know, all great things from the Lord occur in Florida. So hijinks ensue in a very Floridian way. But man, I'm loving this book right now.
Awesome. How'd you find it?
I think it was one of those, you know, books you need to read this spring or this winter. Uh-huh. And saw it and I thought, okay, I read the plot summary, kind of like the idea, and ordered it and never looked back.
I like it. Anything you want to be different in your reading life or anything you want more of?
I don't know. I don't know if I would classify myself as a mystery genre kind of reader, But I think I really am finding out about myself that I love books with a mysterious bent to them. And that could be like in the central point of the book. Like I just read The Nest. Like I just finished The Nest. And I don't think that's a mysterious book, but there was all along the way, I was like, how are they going to wrap this up? Like, how are they going to get to the point where I know they need to get, but I have no idea how to get there. So any book that always has me guessing until the last couple of pages, I want to read more books like that.
Okay. I like the sound of that. Well, I have ideas for you, but I'm going to need to think about them really, really hard, really quickly because red lights. Okay. I'm going to try to find some green lights for you right after the break.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Knox, welcome back.
Glad to be back.
Okay, I have a short and sweet list for you, and I'm going to hope something sticks.
Oh, I'm so excited.
It's like making pop culture predictions, except I only have three darts to throw at the wall.
Listen, you probably can't miss with me. Me and your mom, or me and my mom, we're like the biggest fans of your recommendations. So when you speak, it's like the white smoke at the Vatican.
I got to meet your mom in Birmingham at the podcast live events. Right. I loved meeting your mom.
Like, my mom's been really, you know, excited about my podcast and everything. But when I told her I was coming on, it was like next level. It was like, what? What? What are you doing when?
At the next live event, I'll take that up with her. No, okay. I can't be in Dallas, but I wish I could. And at the next live event after that, I will take that up with your
mom.
There
you go. Yeah. There you go.
Okay. I have a really weird one for you, and I want to get it out of the way because I am not at all sure what you are going to think about this. But I think if you gave it a chance, you might really enjoy it because it is the coming together of serious literary fiction and contemporary celebrities.
Oh, I love that.
Okay. So to a select group of people in the literary world, they have been all abuzz for a long time over the first novel by previous short story and essay author George Saunders. He won the National Book Award. His most recent book was 10th of December, and he decided he wanted to write a novel about Abraham Lincoln. Do you know anything about this?
I don't know anything about this.
Okay. It gets weirder. So it's called Lincoln in the Bardo, and it came out on Valentine's Day, oddly enough. And we have Abraham Lincoln, and the Bardo comes from Tibetan Buddhism. It's this middle in-between spiritual landscape where we have to go between physical lives. So in this novel, if you know anything about Lincoln, like, I read that Doris Kearns Goodwin biography, A Team of Rivals of Him. It kind of rocked my world finding out how little I knew. But I remember this episode that George Saunders is riffing from that novel because she goes into serious detail. When in 1862, Lincoln's 11-year-old son, Willie, who he referred to as like a golden child. I might be botching the term, but you get the idea. Mm-hmm. Just dearly beloved son, not in the sense that like all sons aren't beloved, but just really sweet, gentle, like luminous kid that everybody loved. And he died of typhoid. And Lincoln was in serious, deep despair, so deep that he was a completely different person during a very intense period of mourning, which was also happened at the height of the Civil War when the man and the country were already under great stress. So in this novel, Willie dies, and he goes to the Bardo, and he encounters all these characters. And I got to say, I read this on Kindle, and that was not a good idea. Because you can't tell what's going on. Like, they're talking about when you first encounter people's names who are speaking in the Bardo. I'm like, wait, are these font directions? Because this is making no sense to me. Do not read this book in Kindle. So he sent him to the Bardo, and Lincoln comes in after him, and it's this, everybody in the Bardo is surprised, like, what is this man doing? And what Saunders does is, first of all, he has this like weird situation that he's brought to the page, but also he toys with the idea, toys is too light a word, he really explores the idea that Lincoln's grief changed the way that he viewed what needed to happen in the war to get everybody out of that situation. It's really, it's so strange, but it's so interesting. Like, he juxtaposes things that you think that those don't go together, but it's really,
that's where I live. That's my favorite kind of movie, story, book, where like you, and even the fact that you take something that actually did happen and just color it a different way, or explore it a different way. I'm endlessly fascinated with stuff like that.
I was trying to decide as I read it on Kindle if I thought it was ambitious and didn't quite work, or if I thought it was really good. I definitely knew as I was reading it, like, wow, I need some time with this to let it sink in. But then I found out that the audio version has a full cast of characters drawn from, like, professional actors narrating it. And I thought, oh my goodness, that would be perfect. I don't know who does Lincoln, but I'm imagining like Willie coming into the Bardo and Lincoln coming in after him. And there's all the whispers of the people there talking about like, who are these guys? What is going on? So, okay, with that in mind, here's your narration. So the author does a little bit, and I wish I knew which part he is. Nick Offerman, who's like a big dude in audiobook narrating. David Sedaris.
What?
Carrie Brownstein. Miranda July, Lena Dunham. I mean,
oh my,
you
want
to listen to that, right?
I want to watch that movie. Forget, like, I'll listen to them do anything. Nick Offerman, are you kidding me?
So it's short. It's only 7.5 hours, which I think sounds perfect. And I don't know if you listen to audiobooks, do you?
I do a little bit. I don't that much, though, and I need it. I think part of it is, like, I prefer a little bit of a production quality, which sounds like this is it. Like, it's not just a straight author reading it for 20 hours.
Well, I'm glad this wouldn't be your first one, but I'm thinking for you, if anything was going to push you over the edge, this is it.
Oh, I think I'm going to do the audio. I think that's what I'm going to do instead of the physical book. Oh man, that's really exciting.
Okay. So here are some other authors. We have Ben Stiller, Susan Sarandon, Brad Whitford, Megan Mullally, Rainn Wilson, Jeff Tweedy, Jeff Tambor. I mean, oh, Don Cheadle? Come on. Mary Carr. I didn't know she did that.
Oh my gosh.
They're all voices.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Book one.
I don't know if you can beat that one. Like, it's going to be hard to follow that. You might just want to stop there.
See, I wanted to get my weird one out of the way because I wasn't sure if I would scare you with its weirdness.
Listen, that's never a phrase I'll ever utter in my life.
Okay. Well, here's underwhelming book two. Are you ready?
Yeah.
What do you know about Chris Bavone?
Literally nothing.
Okay. Awesome. His first book was The Expats. And I heard Books on the Nightstand again. I heard a recording that he did for a Books on the Nightstand event where he talked about how his first novel was inspired by living in Luxembourg when his wife was sent to work there for Amazon.com. And he was pretty much along for the ride raising twins. And I think he tells the story about how he wrote some novel that involved him changing poopy diapers, and his editor, I might be totally botching the story. We will link to the actual story in show notes. I remember him saying how his editor was like, for this to work, you need more guns and less diapers.
Less poopy diapers, more guns. That's exactly. A life philosophy.
Exactly. Okay. So his first book is The Expats, but for you, I like his second book, The Accident. There are one or two characters that are the same, but they are not. That's just like a fun little wink. Can I still say wink after our Ready Player One conversation?
Absolutely.
That's a fun little, hey, welcome back. If you already read his first book, they are not remotely like interdependent on each other for understanding. Okay. So I like The Accident because, like Razor Girl, there's a big car wreck that kind of sets the plot in motion. And there's a manuscript and a mystery and a whole bunch of CIA operatives chasing each other. Well, here, let's back up. Okay. In New York City, I think the whole novel unfolds over the course of like a day or a week or a very compressed timeline. But I read this when it first came out in January 2015. So memory doesn't exactly serve, but that's okay because you just need to know the premise. There's a literary agent and she has somehow gotten this anonymous manuscript on her desk. She doesn't know who delivered it or where it came from or who wrote it, but she does know that it tells long buried, closely held, highly explosive secrets about a whole bunch of really powerful people. And it also makes some references to a few things from her own past that she didn't think anybody who would be writing anonymous manuscripts knew about. So what happens is the story starts getting out and the people who touch it end up getting killed quickly.
Uh-oh.
And violently. And she's like, holy goodness, what is happening? So it does unfold over the course of one long day and it keeps getting like they keep ratcheting up the tension and the danger. And by the end of the day, we're like going around the world trying to shut this thing down. And the person who's being unmasked is, if I remember correctly, the media mogul of like a major news network.
Gotcha.
How's that sound?
Yeah, no, I like any kind of compressed timeline. I really like. I don't like when it's over the course of 8 years and you never really know when like you're lapsing time. So when you're like, this is taking place over 3 days, I'm all in.
Okay, this sounds kind of lame, but what else for book three? Have you read anything else by Noah Hawley?
I have not. Because I went straight from watching his TV shows to reading his book. Honestly, I didn't know he'd written anything else.
Okay. So the book I think you might enjoy, it's called The Good Father. It's a previous book by Noah Hawley. This one was first published in 2012. Here's what happens. Bare bones of the plot. We have a very important, successful medical doctor. He's at Columbia in New York. And in the opening scene, he's sitting home with his family, eating dinner, watching TV, and the news is on. And what they see is that the Democratic candidate for president has been shot at a rally. And on video, his son appears to be the assassin. And he is like, what? Like, no. There is no way. What could possibly have happened? He's been framed. He's been set up. Something has gone horribly, horribly wrong. But what? And it goes from there.
Oh, that's like, listen, that's, I remember reading The Road and like,
obviously, was on my list. I'm glad you read it.
Okay. See, I have a son, obviously he's 8, and any kind of father son dynamic, I have a great relationship with my dad. Like that's a big part of, you know, who I am. That's such easy space for me to get into and like really give myself over to is father-son relationships. So especially set in that context where there's some kind of mysterious circumstances, that sounds really, really good.
I don't want to say too much, but I will say the good upstanding medical doctor goes on this whole big journey to find out if his son was really the person he thought he was.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
And it's an interesting ride.
I'm surprised this hasn't been made to like a movie or something.
Right. Especially when like the man would know people who could get it done.
Seriously. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, maybe it's next because maybe this is just my impression, but I think Before the Fall was kind of a surprise how well it sold.
Really? I don't know if it was in between seasons, but I think you can certainly feel the rushedness of that book in between his like film. Cause he famously, is a prodigious worker. So I think you could, I don't think they anticipated that, but he was a famous person when he wrote it, you know, so they couldn't have been that surprised. Right.
Good point. Okay. Knox, of those three picks, what do you think you'll read next?
I didn't think there'd be any, competition for Lincoln and the Bardo, but this Good Father, I think I'm going to go The Good Father and then clear out some space in my life and in my soul and then do Lincoln and the Bardo after that.
I like the sound of it. Can't wait to hear what you think.
I'm so excited. I will report back and hopefully I can have three like green lights just booked in advance on the podcast.
I don't even want to think about it. That just makes me nervous.
Oh, that's awesome.
This has been fun. Thanks for coming to the front of the house today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, readers, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Knox today. Head to the podcast site to share your recommendations for Knox and to let him know what you thought of my recommendations. That page is at whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/71, and it's also where you'll find the full list of titles we talked about today. Make sure to subscribe to Knox's show, The Popcast, on iTunes, and say hi to him on Twitter, at Knox McCoy. If you're on Twitter, let me know there, at Ann Bogle. That is Ann with an E, B as in books, O-G-E-L. Tag us on Instagram to share what you are reading. You can find me there at Ann Bogle and at What Should I Read Next. To be the first to hear about upcoming guests and more fun behind-the-scenes What Should I Read Next news, like that live event we're having, make sure you're getting our newsletter. Sign up at whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/newsletter. Readers, that's it for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. And as Rainer Maria Rilke said, ah, how good it is to be among people who are reading. Happy reading, everyone.